among them. And you can see these calcifiers had different kinds of responses. We've heard about the mollusk largely having a positive response to increasing saturation levels. Makes a lot of sense. Surprising difference about crustaceans, or at least odd, seems to be that calcification decreases with increasing saturation levels, which is rather surprising, and I think the mechanism has yet to be worked out, but you see here that lobsters are not only tolerant to rather corrosive waters, but they become increase their calcification rates. And so these are the treatments. It's important to note that they were done at, this was done at 25 degrees Celsius, which is well above the comfort zone for lobsters. So it would be interesting to do this at more ambient levels, typical of the Gulf of Maine. Another study by of European lobster, this one focused on larval effects. I'll just bring your attention quickly to the point that there are three larval stages, and then there's a metamorphosis to the post-larval stage that looks a lot like a lobster. Take-home message here is that calcification levels were pretty similar among the three larval stages, but dropped significantly at the fourth stage. This is the stage that where you're starting to get exoskeleton development. So there seems to be a cost here. But there was no effect on survival, development time, or growth for Homarus gammarus. Similar study has not been done for the American lobster that's of any quality that I know of. And finally, I wanted to just bring your attention to this work on king crab and tanner crab because it's yet another that looks at survivability and growth. And in this case, there was definitely a negative effect of acidification on growth. On survival here and on growth under these rather extreme conditions, very very corrosive conditions, and in the highest PCO2 treatment. And remember, this is very cold water, 4 to 8 degrees for these species. Final major slide here is just, you know, this brings your attention to the mechanisms operating in calcification at the tissue level in the exoskeleton. So we're looking at the, this is a study done by Kunkel et al. He's done some really fine structure analyses of the American lobster exoskeleton, and basically to whip through these different layers, we've got this. First of all, you've got the blood pH at about on the acid side, whereas your ambient seawater pH is going to be up around 7.8, 8.2. Bottom water is probably closer to the 7.8 level. But then you have this, as you move down through the exoskeleton, you enter this unstirred layer that's essentially basic because you're accumulating hydroxyl ions out here and is thought to be somewhat antibiotic and thus a barrier to bacterial infection. Then you work your way through the first physical barrier, the epicuticle, which regulates dissolution of the calcite layer, which is just below it in the exocuticle. And then you get further down into what are referred to as trabeculae. It's mainly a matrix of more of this amorphous carbonate, calcium carbonate, available to the exterior, and may be a path for invasion of disease. But let me just wrap up with this laundry list of quote, I could not have said it better myself. Dave Cousins, president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association, Bangor Daily News, he said it well. We don't really know the effects of ocean acidification on lobsters, but we do know the effects on shellfish and clams, and it's not positive. As long as the industrial nations of the world use fossil fuel, it's going to get worse. He said it well. Here's the challenges to the fishery, and this is my last slide. The lobster range is clearly shifting northward. We're going to be seeing increasing losses in southern New England, as far as I can tell, and a deepening of the population down there to offshore deeper waters. We have a worrisome expanding prevalence of shell disease, and the industry is contending with that. They're also dealing with the increasing cost of fishing and the dropping value of the product, and they're hard at work mitigating that, as good businessmen they are. These extreme climate events have taken the industry by surprise, and so that brings me to the scientific challenges ahead. We've got to reconcile some of these stage and species-specific differences in OA effects, those opposite effects of PCO2 on calcification in different organisms is intriguing, and the mechanisms need to be understood. We've got to also put acidification effects in perspective relative to other physical and biotic drivers of recruitment and lobster abundance, and that's why I felt it important to do that up perspective. understanding how shell disease is linked to temperature and OA effects, if at all, is going to involve a better understanding of the skeleton mineralogy and physiology behind shell deposition. And we've got to understand the other processes that ocean acidification and temperature affect, including gene expression, protein function, oxygen binding, immunology, hormonal controls, and so on. We haven't seen any long-term studies on growth or survival yet, lifelong growth studies, that is. These have mostly been short-term studies, and so we need to expand our view there. And nobody's done any work on the population level, looking at microevolutionary responses with OA and temperature being an important selective agents and operating at different levels, intensities regionally. Last two things, what are the implications for trophic interactions? If calcification is shells are softening, does that make lobsters more prone to predators? Predicting these extreme events, we're doing a fair job of predicting the long-term trends and the means, but these extreme events seem to be the main factors that are affecting distributions in the northward shift. So I'll stop there. I know I ran a little bit long there, but I think I captured it. Thank you, folks.